for those of you that are on again tonight, I want to apologize for last week because it was just me and Mama Ann, and she went back in time in her mind, and it was one of those things that I just couldn't control, and she was not in the bed. And they were just me and her here, so when I realized that I couldn't do any more than take and put her in the bed, I said, well, we'll just call it off.
Yeah, so, I apologize for that.
That's okay. This is going to be study 102 in our study and walk, and we're probably going to get to some of them tonight if the Lord allows. And this is study 102, as I said, and this is September the 14th, 2016. And we're going to be, again, in Ezekiel 20. And I think we covered verses 1 through 6, but we're going to go back and pick up with 6 again and go from there. And it deals with, if you look at the way it's laid out in Ezekiel here, and you look at the alternations there, and we find that the structure here is made to correspond with the repeated and extended rebellions. And so when you think about rebellions here and you think about what God has did for Israel down through the ages, and we come to realize that some of the things that Ezekiel says is very closely related to some of the things that we find early on in Exodus, and we find also that Ezekiel says more about Exodus than any other writer other than the writer of Exodus.
Moses, yeah.
Moses did. And so we see the correlation really between the two events, the coming out of Egypt, and it doesn't say too much about the Red Sea, but it also speaks about the murmuring in the wilderness. And Ezekiel tells us, through the words of Jehovah, that tells us some things that we really didn't understand in Exodus, because it talks about the 10 times that they murmured, and that God, held himself back to an extent. And then finally, he got enough of their murmurings and did something about it. But it was to the older people. It was to those that were 20 years old and up. And this kind of corresponds with the people that he drove out of the land and sent them under Nebuchadnezzar's rule for a while, because it was pretty well known at that point, that the older people were not going to get to come back into the land. And the fact was that this was the same thing with going into the promised land, or the land flowing with milk and honey, is it stated there. So you see the correlation between the two events has a lot of common ground in that aspect. And so that was one thing that I wanted to get involved with chapter 20, because of the events were so similar, I guess, to one another. So let's go to Ezekiel 20 and pick up with verse 6. And verse 6 says, in Ezekiel 20, in the day that I lifted up mine hand unto them, to bring them forth of the land of Egypt into a land that I had espied for them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. Or the, actually, the glory there, if you look it up, is beauty. Like a gazelle would be a beautiful animal. Very seldom do you ever see any gazelles with any kind of flaws or blemishes in them. Not unlike you might see in domesticated animals. It's just almost a thing that doesn't happen. So it said, or in that day, if you go back and look at it, in the day or that day or at the time that I lifted up my hand or that I swore with an oath. And God, certainly, before them, he lifted up his hand. Whether they could see it or not, I don't know, but he knew. He said unto them or before them to bring them forth out of the land of Egypt. He was going to move them away from the captivity of those that were in charge in Egypt. And he was going to bring them into a land that I had espied for them. See, so he had a plan already. He had a plan in place. And, of course, he gave Abraham. He said, look around you, Abraham. All this land that you walk through is going to be yours and to your generations, to your people. And so the land there that he's talking about is 776 in the Strong, and that's Ereth, or Eretz, and it means firm earth. It's going to be good land, tillable land. It's going to be land that is already growing with vineyards and crops and all of the things that man would need. The Canaanites, you know, were in the land. And so he says that I, Jehovah, had espied for them. And espied there is 84:46. And the English word for espied there is the word tor, T-O-O-R, tor. And it means meandered. That when he's talking about espying, he's searching out or meandered about in God's way of looking and doing things. And he had already looked over it pretty well. And he says, this land that he had espied for them, it was flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. And, you know, when God is giving you a reasonable explanation of these things, then it begins to mean things that maybe you and I haven't seen to or thought about. But milk is really the staff of infants. And so
the beginning staple.
And so these people were going in there and were going to be supplied with evidently all the milk they could need, that they would need. And from their little ones on up. And so it's represented. The milk and the honey is a representative picture of the land that's there, and it was a land of beauty. You know, evidently these Canaanites had really cleaned it up, cleaned up, and had all this tillable property, all this stuff. So they were there for the long haul, whether they knew it or not. And also it talks about the glory or the beauty of the land. And the beauty of the land here is, I think, is to be considered blooms. If you're going to have any honey, you got to have blooms. You got to have something that the bees can make the honey out of. And it, so blooms comes into mind, whether we think about it too much or not. It comes into mind, and these blooms basically turns into fruit or turns into something that man can use as food. And so along with the milk and honey, you know, you've got the staple of the youth and the staple of the older people. So it gives you a picture, really, of, you know, both sides of the of that story there. And that's where we made it to in last week's study, which turned out to be about 32-34 minutes, I guess. So it wasn't too bad, even with that. Let's look at verse 7. And it said, "Then said I unto them." Okay, and this is an equal talking, of course, here. It says, "Cast ye away every man the abomination of his eyes, and defile not yourself with the idols of Egypt." Or this is what he got from Jehovah. Because it said, "I am the Lord your God." And over and over last time, I made the point, and what we're reading and studying, when we got the word "I am," I have basically circled it in my notes. Because, you know, when Moses said, "Who am I going to tell Pharaoh sent me in here to get these people?" And he says, "Tell him that I am sent you."
The one.
And so "I am," it still goes on and on and on. He is the great I am. He says, "Then said I unto them," I, Ezekiel, spake unto the elders, because these elders had come to see him again. And the elders come to see him. We'll go over that just a little bit. The elders come to see him because they were getting filled with stuff from these false prophets in the land of Babylon. And God didn't have but this one spokesman there at that particular time. Of course, he was dealing with Daniel and Daniel's cohorts. There's kind of like Job with his cohorts. But so he was speaking unto the elders because they had come to see what God's ideas was, what they could pick from Ezekiel as of God's idea. God says, "You know, I'm tired of you coming to inquire of me." And then he asked Ezekiel, said, "Are you going to take this up, Ezekiel?" And so he gave Ezekiel the honor of saying yes or no, I guess. And so Ezekiel said, "Yeah, you know, I'll give them your message, whatever it is." So it says, "Cast ye away every man the abominations of his eyes." And that "cast" there is to toss or to pitch. And I looked it up, but I didn't write the number down. And sometimes I'll do that. Because, you know, I'm wanting to get on down the line with it. And so I can't tell you what the number was in the Strong's, but it means to toss or to pitch ye away every ish, the disgusting abhorrences, the abominations of his eyes, or the looking to other gods. And defile not, or do not contaminate yourself. 29:30. And that in the Strong's, in the English, is tau-a. And it means to defile or contaminate oneself. But to defile not yourself with the idols or the manufactured gods that Egypt was full of. Egypt was full of these manufactured gods. I don't know how many they had. But it was just, you know, it wasn't just where they found in other places where like the goddess Diana, you know. There was all kinds of idols here that the pharaohs had fallen in love with and used. So it was a big deal with them, you know, because it says, I am there. I am Jehovah Elohim. I am the Lord your God. And he goes back again to say, and to make a point of, I am. I am sent you. And then we get into verse 8. In verse 8, you have two different things going on together. You have rebellion and threatenings in verse 8. So let's turn the page and get to verse 8. Let me kind of get situated a little better here. He said, but they rebelled against me and would not hearken unto me. They did not every man cast away the abominations of their eyes, neither did they forsake the idols of Egypt. Then I said, I will pour out my fury upon them to accomplish my anger against them in the midst of the land of Egypt. See, we didn't really see too much about that except the Passover being instituted. And, you know, and the firstborn of the family being lost. But evidently there was some things went on there that we didn't get the picture, the whole picture in Exodus. And here we're kind of getting the rest of the story in this thing. Because do you remember anything other than sending the plagues and all this, and then he sent the Passover thing on them, and they didn't know what to do with it, and they lost their eldest child of each family got taken out by the death angel.
Well, it's kind of like Paul getting that.
Yeah.
But the rest of the story about Genesis when Abraham didn't, you know, it was Paul that told us that Abraham thought God would just raise Isaac right back up.
Yeah.
You never learned that in Genesis.
Yeah, and also the fact that Abraham looked for a city.
Yeah.
You know, whose builder and maker was God.
Yeah, we never knew that.
We never knew that. So there are things here that God reveals to us by other people that we never knew before. I think that would be a common thing that we could say that sometimes it happens that way, because God doesn't give us, all that he knows for that one situation or for that situation. So let's go and break it down a little bit. Verse 8. It said, but they rebelled against me. They became bitter and perverse toward me, God. They did not care for the Lord God that furnishes them with everything, give them all these things, and they didn't like, also they didn't like the law and to live under the law and the ordinances and the statutes, because that was a hindrance. But God used those things to show them who he was and to show them that he was still in charge. Okay, let's read on there. And would not hearken unto me. They refused to listen to God's word. But yet, they would come down to Ezekiel and inquire of Ezekiel as to what God was doing. Because they knew Ezekiel knew more than the false prophets that they were listening to. Because you see, the false prophets was telling, you're not going to be here very long. You're going to get to go home. And that was a lie. Okay. So, and he says, they did not, every man, cast away the abominations of their eyes. They did not obey. These Ish would not obey God. And they would not toss or pitch away the sinful joys that they got out of man's imagination with these other gods. The abominations of their eyes. It was, and I imagine quite a lot of that was sexual too. And so that just kind of fell into place with what they thought was really good. And it said, neither did they forsake the idols of Egypt. When I see neither, I think of nor. I think, you know, neither nor kind of goes together. And it said, nor did they leave off or forsake the manufactured gods of the Egyptians that they were inundated with while they were in captivity to the Egyptian Pharaoh. Okay. Then, you see that word then there, down there where the verse kind of breaks into two parts. I put but now. Because I think about the Old Testament, and I think, but now I said, so here's what's coming, boys. You didn't listen to what I said. You didn't want to hear what I said. You didn't want to heed my voice. You didn't want to heed what I had to tell you. So now, but now, there's something else going to take place. Then, at that point, so you see, we're talking about the rebellion, and we've talked about the rebellion. Now we're going to talk about the threatening. So then is the but now. So we're going to get the threat here. I said, and this is Jehovah, this is Ezekiel speaking what Jehovah told him. He said, I will pour out my fury upon them. I will pour out heat, rage, and anger. 25:34 in the Strong. And I didn't put the English word there. Sometimes I will, sometimes I don't. So he said, I'll pour out the heat, rage, and anger upon my people. For what reason? To accomplish. And accomplish there is 36:15. And that's Kalal. To accomplish my anger against them. The end or finish. If you're going to accomplish something, you're going to end it or you're going to finish it. And he was going to end his or finish his anger against Israel in that sense. And he said, in the midst of the land of Egypt. And so what he was doing there and what he did there, and he says in other places here, it was before their eyes. So evidently, Egypt saw some of the things that was going on here. I don't know whether they understood it or not, but as we go along down through this thing, he says, you know, I did it before their eyes. And I don't know how it got transferred to them in a in a sense to where they could understand what was happening. But it certainly happened. In verse 9, he says, but I wrought for my name's sake. And wrought there, you know, I think of wrought as I was in the iron business for a long time, and you can wrought iron by heating it up and beating it out. And so that kind of goes along with the fury that God presented to these people. It was hot. And you can bet what they were going through was something that was pretty hot. I would imagine the Red Sea looked pretty good to them when they got there. And that's my thought. And he said the rot there is 62:13, and that's also. And it means to do or make for my name's sake or my name's position. And that is 80:34 in the Strong's, and I keep telling you over and over again, as long as we're in the Old Testament, and if you get in the 60s up, it is almost like God had to come up with some new words for mankind, that what you see earlier on don't really usually compare with these words from, say, 6,500 up to 8,500, because it seems like these are like some of the words that we come up with today. But listen to this. This word here, namesake, is S-H-A-M-E in the English. And so I think that's kind of maybe where we get our shame. You know, they put Jesus Christ on the stake in shame. But look what he come out with. Look what he did for us. The greatest gift in the world was his blood for us. But it cost him that shame. Okay? So it's a name position. You know, it's a position of name in that sense. That it should not be polluted. And there is 2470 or 2490 is, you have to look at the two words to get the meaning of this, and it means weak, sick, or afflicted. So he wanted to bring these people down a notch or two because of what they did, but he didn't want them to appear weak, sick, or afflicted in that sense. Now, whether they did or not, I don't know. It says that it should not be polluted before the heathens or before the nation. And the nation that we're dealing with here is the nation of Egypt, among whom they were in whose sight. Okay? So it says right there in the scripture that they were the captive of the Egyptians, and that's whose sight they were in. And so God's doing this to them before their sight. Now, I don't know where they can determine that or not, but surely the children of Israel could. He said, I made myself known unto them in bringing them forth. So the Egyptians saw that God removed them from out of the land of Egypt, the land of captivity, in verse 9. So he said, I made myself known unto them in bringing them forth out of the land of Egypt. So they understood what they were going through and having to go through. I don't know what God was doing to them, but evidently the Egyptians could see something going on and maybe did not know what it was in that sense. Did that make sense to you? It does to me. Then we get to verse 10, where it says, "Wherefore I caused them to go forth out of the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness." So do you see that? You see, the Red Sea is just left out of that part of the story. In that sense there in 10. "Wherefore, or in like manner, I caused them or made them a way to go forth out of the land of Egypt." And I added into my notes there by parting the Red Sea for them. And then closing it up when the Egyptians got in there.
On the Egyptians.
Yeah. And he says, "And brought them," Israel, or "I directed Israel into the wilderness." So when they went across the Red Sea, you know, the first place they were going to make it to was in the wilderness. And that was verse 10. How are we doing on that? Okay. We're good. And he says, "And I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgment, which if a man do, he shall even live in them." So in verse 11, he gives us a little more insight here as to what he's going to do. And he says, "And I gave them my statutes." And statutes is 2708. And it's Kahakal. And it means enactments or appointments that was set at law. You know, a statute is something that God says, you're going to have to do this and follow this. You're going to have to do this thing. You know, they were going to have to, of course, to coming out of Egypt, they hadn't offered any sacrifices or anything for their sins or anything of that sort. So here, you know, along with what God showed Moses after he got them, you know, in the land, in the wilderness, that the things that they were going to have to live by. And so the beginning, I think, of the institution of the law began to form there. And he says that I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments. And the judgments there is 49:41. And that in the English is mishpat. Mishpat. And it means verdicts. And verdicts there is kind of like the word walk. It has a lot of stuff that goes with it. Because, you know, verdicts can vary greatly. And they also can be favorable or unfavorable. And so when I think about verdicts, I just use that. Because these verdicts can be of God's favor or they can be very unfavorable from God. And so they can be good or bad. To put it in another way. Okay? So, and he said, "I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them." It says, there is a man, there is not Ish. It is Adam. It's not Ish, but Adam. And so, I think it goes right back to what Adam had done wrong, and he had to pay for what he done wrong. Even though you know, he might have been goaded into it. So there you go. So which if Adam do them, he shall even live within them. So God gave these people when he brought them out and he got them in across into the wilderness. He said, okay, here's what I expect out of you. This is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to do it. And if you don't do it, you're going to have to pay the price. Does that sound reasonable? It does. It certainly does to me.
That was the agreement.
And he says, moreover also, I gave them my Sabbath to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am, there it is again, the Lord that sanctify them. Now he said, I'm the one that sets you apart. Everybody else. So let's break it down a little bit. He says, moreover, and to, or also, I gave them my Sabbaths. I, Jehovah, sent forth the commandment of the seventh day of rest. I rested on the seventh day. You're going to rest on the seventh day. And this was to be a sign between me and them. And the sign there is the number 226. You see, this is early on in the Hebrew. 226 means oath, O-T-H, almost like O-A-T-H in the English. But they ain't there's not an A there, but it's oath, oath between me and them. It's a mark or a signal. This would be the sign between Jehovah and the nation of Israel. Okay? That they might know, that they might understand or comprehend that I am. What did he tell Moses? Moses said, who am I going to say sent me? He said, I am sent you. I am the Lord Jehovah that sanctify you or set you apart. I have chosen you to set you apart for my will. Okay? It says in 13, but the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. Oh. So, they wasn't on too good a footing when he brought them out of Egypt, but here they are over there now, and they haven't changed much. But the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They walked not in my statutes. There's your word. Walk not. They walked like man wanted to walk. They didn't walk like God wanted them to walk. See? And they despise my judgment, which if a man do, he shall even live in them, and my Sabbaths they greatly polluted. Then, here's another then. Or, but now, I said I would pour out my fury upon them in the wilderness to consume them.
And I think you can read about some of that in Numbers.
Oh, yeah, they lost.
First they even opened up and swallowed.
They lost a lot of people. So we break it down. It says, but the house of the nation of Israel rebelled or became bitter and perverse against me, Jehovah, in the wilderness. And they walked not. That's 19 and 80, and that is Halak. They walked not, or they walked as man would walk. They walked not in my statutes. My appointments that were set at law, they didn't keep. They didn't keep them. They didn't care to keep them. They thought they'd get away with it, I guess. And they despised or hatest my judgment or my verdicts, whether they be favorable or unfavorable, whether they be good or bad, right or wrong in their eyes. And it says, which if a man, Adam, do them or do, he shall live within them. And he is going back to saying what he said before. And my Sabbaths, which is, by the way, is the fourth of the Ten Commandments that Moses brought down from the mount. They greatly contaminated or polluted. So, I think whatever they knew at this time just kind of went in one ear and out the other. Then I said, or at that time, I said, I would pour out my heat, anger, and rage upon my people in the wilderness to destroy them. So, he had in his mind to destroy them, and that's the number 3615. He was going to consume them, but not all of them. And so from verses 14 to 17, we have God kind of backing off. There was some forbearance here in the mind of God. Okay, so we got time probably to get into this. And he says in 14, but I wrought for my name's sake that it should not be polluted before the heathen in whose sight I brought them out. Now, he was in the wilderness. He was away from the heathen. And I don't know why he wanted to go, why God would want to go to this kind of trouble unless they were nomads or people in the wilderness that would go back to Egypt and tell Egypt what God had done to them in the wilderness. I have thought about this situation, and you know, they're over there in the wilderness. I don't know how many other people they are in that part of the world, but you know, it was a kind of a nomadic country, so you might run into different people. I don't know how they would get back to Egypt from where they were there. But nevertheless, he said, but I wrought as to make or to do, again, 62:13, for my name's sake, for my position or shame, that it, my name, should not be polluted or contaminated before the heathen or before the nation. And I assume that was the nation of Egypt. In whose sight I brought them out, because he's already said they were in Egypt's sight when he brought them out. So, seems like it's pretty cut and dried about that. In whose sight of Egypt I brought them out or removed them from their captivity. And then we get down to verse 15. Yet also I lifted up my hand unto them in the wilderness. Also, so evidently he swore unto them again in the wilderness that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all land. You see, he told them that he had this land spied out. Okay, Go with me back to the book of Numbers. I want to go to Numbers 14. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, I want to go back to Numbers 14. That's on page 200 in your companion Bible if you have, and you have it. And I want to look at verses 21 to 34. Okay, 21 to 34. He said, "But as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all these men which have seen my glory and my miracles which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and have tempted me now these 10 times and have not heard or hearkened to my voice." So you see how bad it was? Okay. The 10 times. "Surely they shall not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoke me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him and had followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwell in the valley. Tomorrow turn you and get you into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea." And the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, "How long shall I bear with this evil congregation, which murmur against me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel when they murmur against me. So unto them, as truly as I live, saith the Lord, as ye have spoken in mine ears, so will I do unto you. Your carcass shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me, doubtless ye shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. But your little ones, which ye said should be a prey them, I will bring in, and they shall know the land which you have despised. But as for you, your carcass, they shall fall in this wilderness, and your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years, and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. And the number of the days in which you search the land, even 40 days, each day for a year, shall ye bear your iniquities, even 40 years, and you shall know my breach of promise." So you see, he gives us the understanding of why they went in for the 40 days to spy out the land, and they were going to stay in the wilderness a year for each day they were spying it out, because the others said, "We can't take it." But Caleb and Joshua,
like faith,
said, "Yes, we can. We can take it." So when we get down to 15 in Ezekiel 20, it'll make a little more sense, where it said, "Yet also I lifted up my hand unto them in the wilderness, that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them." See, he swore to them that they wasn't going to make it. And so this is what Ezekiel was telling these elders that had come before him.
History lesson.
So here's a history lesson to them. Okay? that I would bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. And that goes back to what we read in verse 6 when we started the study tonight. And so that deals with 15. Now let's go ahead and do 16 anyway. He says, because they despised my judgments and walked not in my statutes, but polluted my Sabbaths, for their heart went after their idols. It seems like this was it. The whole time, the whole thing, they had rather go to idol worship than to worship God.
They've learned very well from their captors down through the centuries.
Yeah, and still, you know, and here they are going through all this again simply because of idolatry, the whole thing, you know. God putting them out of the land, putting them out of the temple area because they despise my judgments. The judgments of verse 11, the verdicts, whether they were favorable or unfavorable. And walk not. And here again, walk not. It is again, holak. They didn't walk in God's way, but they walked not in God's statutes or in the things that he had enacted for them to do while they were in the wilderness. And then, of course, you know, whenever they get over to the mountain, where they were going to camp for a while, that didn't change there either. But polluted my Sabbath. They contaminated or spoiled the day of rest that God had set aside for them to do. He says, for them, in 16, for their hearts, went after their idols. Their heart's desire, guess what, was toward the false gods that came out of Egypt. They just would not give them up. Absolutely. Would not give them up. So it's 9:21. We can go ahead and call it off here because it's fixing to turn into a little different situation here. But this would probably be the best place that we could end it this afternoon or tonight. And we'll pick up with 17 the next time That was study 102. Well, I'll put the next number on it next week. Okay, so we covered verses 6 through 16. So we covered 10 or 11 verses here, plus went back to Numbers and read that in Numbers there, and gives us the understandings of some of the things that were going on there. So at least 10 times early on in the wilderness, they murmured against God. And that was not something that he wanted to hear. And so they were going to have to pay the price for it. Whether they liked it or whether they didn't like it, they were still, this was the way he had this thing set up, and they were going to either do it or pay the price. And I guess they chose to pay the price. So that's another lesson that we need to understand. When we don't follow God's word and God's will, then there's some sort of problem that arises.
Al already made that same comparison here online.
Absolutely.
Exactly what he said. He said, I can't help but see a parallel with the Christians in the USA today. God have mercy on America. Isaiah 1:9.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. And there's lots of things we can look around us today and see that kind of parallels all of this too. Going all the way back to Egypt, then coming to Babylon with this thing, and then moving on up to when Christ came, and then this 2,000 years after he showed up, that we're still allowing things other than God to rule our lives. So, thank you for your time, and these things are kind of like a little tough to work out sometimes, because there's so much here that we need, as we go along, that we need to look at and go back and look at other places too, to come up with information that we don't get all in one place. And this is just another way that God does it. And if you're going to be a one that gets involved in study, and in deep study, you're going to find out the more you do it, the more involved it gets. You've got to go to other places. You basically, the book testifies of itself. And if you don't get involved in the book, then you're going to get a narrow-minded view of what you're getting involved in. And if you don't look up these words, find it out what they mean, it's really tough too. So having said that, I'll get off my soapbox. And thank you for being with us tonight, and continue to pray for myself and my wife. She now knows that she don't have any feet. She gathered that Sunday or Monday, that she doesn't have any feet. She kept telling me, you got to buy me some shoes. You know, when all this is said and done, you got to buy me some shoes. And she has kind of quit saying that, because her balance is such. I have a prosthetic for the foot that's been gone 5 years. But the doctor and I have kind of come to the conclusion that her balance and that her depth perception is just not comparable for a double amputee. I mean, these people that come back from Afghanistan and other places, these young guys will tell you right quick, and a lot of them are still in pretty good health, but they just don't have no bottom limbs. Mm-hmm. But they'll tell you right quick that the loss of the feeling of the ground, even with one foot,
you got to retrain your
mind. Is a great help, because everything has to be reprogrammed.
Right.
And I'm feeling like her 77 years old and having some dementia problems, that's just not a practical aspect or way to go. But remember us that we will do what the Lord's will is, and whatever it is, we will. If we're led that way, we'll certainly do it. But that seems to now be the situation. So, we're going to have to have help to a certain extent to get through the rest of our lives, because it's a 24-hour job. And I can attest to that, because it's been 3 years and 2 months tomorrow since I've been anywhere, really done anything, or anything other than just an hour or two at the time. And but God has been gracious to us. It's still given us 59 years together. And hope we'll have some more. God bless you. And we'll remember you all in prayer too.